Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Tonight on Trailblazers, we welcome a leader whose impact on education in the Lehigh Valley will be felt for generations to come. For more than a decade, Dr. Jack Silva has led through periods of transformation, challenge, innovation, and growth, helping guide one of Pennsylvania's largest and most respected public school districts during a time when education itself has been rapidly evolving. From navigating the unprecedented challenges of the pandemic to championing equity, student opportunity, workforce readiness, mental health support, and academic innovation, Dr. Silva has consistently emphasized that education is not simply about test scores. It's about preparing young people to thrive in an increasingly complex world. And now, as he prepares for retirement, tonight's conversation becomes something even deeper, a reflection on leadership, legacy, public service, resilience, and what it truly means to dedicate a career to shaping lives through education. We'll talk about the evolution of the district, the pressures facing public education today, the lessons leadership has taught him, and the future he envisions for Bethlehem students and the legacy he hopes to leave behind. Please welcome a deeply respected educator and leader, Dr. Jack Silva. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for that very kind introduction. It's a pleasure to meet you, Melanie.
Oh, we're so grateful for your service here in the Lehigh Valley. What would you like me to call you? Dr. Jack? Dr. Silva? Jack?
Jack is fine.
Okay, Jack. Jack, before becoming superintendent, before you, the awards and leadership roles, what first drew you to education and what did you realize, when did you realize that this was more than just a profession for you?
I always loved school. As a student, I admired my teachers. I admired the life-changing impact that my teachers and my coaches had on me. So I sort of looked up to them as that would be a very fulfilling career. Although when I graduated from Liberty High School and I left for college, I wasn't an education major right away. I was sort of just like a general studies major. But then the more I thought about it, the more I felt like, yep, there's a purpose behind teaching. There's a purpose behind education. And I would like to have a similar influence the way the teachers influenced me. So that was really what was the impetus of getting into a teaching career. And I was always very fortunate that right out of college as a 22-year-old kid, got my first job in public education and got my own classroom. But it was largely because of the inspiration that I received from my teachers and my coaches.
That's incredible. You've now spent years leading one of Pennsylvania's largest school districts. When you look back, how do you believe the district has evolved under your leadership specifically?
Well, a district evolves not just under one person's leadership.
Sure, it's a team.
It evolves over the whole nature of the support of our community and the leadership team within our district. How it's evolved is one thing that I always tried to emphasize was making the connection between the Bethlehem community and the Bethlehem area school district, because we live in a very we're lucky to live where we are in a very diverse and rich area. So I always thought the best thing would be to blend the district and the community, and for the challenges and the opportunities, all the things that exist in Bethlehem, both the challenges and the opportunities should exist in the Bethlehem Area School District, and we like it that way. So the richness of our arts community, the richness of Bethlehem's vibrant local economy, the higher education opportunities from the colleges in Bethlehem, inviting them in, making them feel comfortable, making them part of our academic program and our student support systems, that was really one of my major goals. So I always said there's something special about the BASD community. And I think if you asked our students and our parents what they like best about a Bethlehem Area School District education, is that it's a real world experience and it really connects you as a learner and eventually as a citizen to your community.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, so I worked in economic development for some time, and I took a front row seat to see the wonderful work. And you were such a force, you know, when it came to the education and talent supply initiative that we have here in the region, where, you know, Bethlehem School District took a front seat to career pathways and opportunities and community impact. And so I commend you for that. You know, the world students are entering today looks dramatically different than it did even 10 years ago. What do you believe education must do differently to truly prepare students for the future?
It has to prepare them more than just achieving school success. It has to keep an eye on life success. So when I graduated from Liberty High School, the requirement was you'd have 27 credits, 4 credits in math, 4 in social studies. You remember how it worked. And then you got your diploma, and then you had to figure out what was going to happen next for you. Mm-hmm. Students today, our community today, can't afford to sort of figure it out after high school. So to what's sort of next for public education, at least for those at the end of it, is an emphasis on college and career readiness, where students get to advance some of their post-secondary experiences into their high school years, mm-hmm. and use that to enrich not only the learning of the academic subjects, but to build their interest, to build their resumes, and build their connections. Because the world of higher education is more and more expensive than ever. Mm-hmm. The need for students to eventually be able to be good citizens and support themselves is as important as ever. So high school and by extension the entire K-12 system has a responsibility for backing up those post-secondary experiences so our students are more college and career ready. Mm-hmm. That, I think, will only continue. That and equally important, I would say, on the younger end for students who are entering us, is to really build strong foundational skills for students so that they can actually access their K-12 education and be college and career ready. I've always been a strong believer that the single most important thing a school district does is assure that the students are strong readers. Mm-hmm. If you don't have strong reading skills, all the things in life are a challenge for you. Mm-hmm. If you have them, you have the keys to the kingdom, and almost every other thing becomes available to you. So the extra effort that is required to make sure kids are reading at grade level and stay reading at grade level has been really a passion project for me and for our principals and our teachers. I'm very proud of them for how they approach that. So it gets more and more of a challenge. Students come to school with more challenges. That's not an excuse. That just means we have to continue our effort. We have to be more precise. We have to use the most evidence-based methods and assure that students are getting to the levels that they need.
Yeah. I want to shift gears here just a little bit. You led during one of the most difficult periods of modern education that modern education has ever faced, the COVID-19 pandemic. What did that experience teach you about leadership under pressure? And, you know, how did things change, right? So you want to do all those wonderful things you just spoke about, but that mm-hmm. was an unprecedented time. Talk yeah. to me a little bit about that.
Well, I remember when Governor Wolf then closed the schools in March, and we received that they would remain closed for 2 weeks, and then there would be a reexamination of how schools would be allowed to open, and it was up to school districts to figure out how exactly they were going to do that. So the old phrase, necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. So it really became necessary for us to basically reinvent our K-12 system, one that had always been rooted in face-to-face relationships, the traditional clock hour class schedule, to something that was going to be virtual. And we were not experts in virtual education. Mm-hmm. You know, right now it's so easy to think, oh, we'll just have our meeting on Zoom. You know, it wasn't like that in at the time when the pandemic started. So we had to lead and communicate better. I remember the challenges of making sure not just communicating to the families out there, but also increasing the quality and the volume of communication with our principals. And we were meeting on Zoom daily tracking issues on a gigantic Google spreadsheet. Every day we would put up 40 new questions. What do you do if this? What do you do if that? And then we would get on the remote programming, and we would solve our issues. At the same time, not only did we have to reinvent the vehicle by which we were providing education, we had to find ways of making sure we were keeping students and families whole. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of kids going hungry during the pandemic. So we really accelerated our food distribution, our community school supports became really anchors of community. They are already, but people just naturally ran to our community schools. I mean, if you remember, in the worst days at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, there was a shortage of diapers. There was a shortage mm-hmm. of basic family needs out there.
Sure.
And we had the ability as a school district, because of our connections in the community and all of our partnerships, to be a center to help provide for those needs. So I always thought it was, you know, we had to show as a school district that we were going to continue operating. That was important. And we were going to continue being concerned and supportive of the community that provides for us.
Mm-hmm.
That those became, you know, really the – it wasn't survival, but it was reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we had to support the teachers. We had to support the principals, because it wasn't easy connecting with students on Zoom and students not having their cameras on and mm-hmm. and kids disappearing because they were living with aunts and uncles in other places, because the living situation might have been a little bit safer for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole year, that spring of 2020, when we reinvented school for 3 months. But then the following year, Melody, 2021-2022, is when we were half in, half out, hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
One day, the next day would be in person.
Yeah.
And that was as challenging or even more challenging of a reinvention and a support for kids. So
yeah.
Luckily, you know, you followed the adage, you know, of the students are healthy, they're focused, they're challenged, and the teachers and the principals are supported, we would be able to get through. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that
the
pandemic was the single biggest challenge and the single biggest historical event of my educational
Absolutely.
Leadership career.
Now, looking back on that, is there one anecdotal story that you're most proud of, you know, on how something was handled or
yeah.
something that was done? Anything to share?
Yeah, we did a lot of creative stuff. I remember one of them, it was in March, and a good number of students had computers, but some didn't. So if we wanted to do remote education, it was very difficult for half of our families. So I remember going to PBS 39.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, most folks have TVs, you know,
yeah.
and you're inside watching TV. And I remember talking to then the CEO, Tim Fallon, and their programming person, Yoni Greenberg. And I said, well, you know, I don't know if we can reach everybody on a computer, but I think we can reach out through our television. Is it possible for us to coordinate our programming where, you know, 8 o'clock on PBS, they show some history related stuff. And then
mm-hmm.
maybe at 9:30, we see some science stuff. And if I know what's coming and our teachers can know what the subject matter is going to be that kids would be watching on TV, maybe that would be enough to send some information home and keep those lessons front and center in
mm-hmm.
their minds. And I remember within a week, we had a week's worth of scheduled programming, and teams of teachers were writing lesson plans.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I remember that. I was there at that time, and it was embraced, and everybody
yeah.
loved it. It was great.
Yeah, and I learned a lot about what was on public television. It had been a while since I'd watched public television with programming for little kids, because my kids were older and grown at that time. But to see you know, how rich the programming was as far as the content, that
yeah.
that was going to be far better than a student just sitting on his bed looking at his phone or doing all that other stuff. So I just remember the community response, whether it was public television, universities, the United Way, businesses that stepped forward and helped our community school. It was a public education has the benefit of serving the public. And at that point, the public definitely was serving the school district.
Yeah. You know, public education often becomes a lightning rod for some societal debates and some pressures. How do you keep students at the center while navigating the politics, the criticism, and competing expectations? I mean, that's probably something you won't miss in retirement, right? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, when someone tells you it's not about the money, it's about the money. And sometimes public school funding in Pennsylvania has had its ups and downs. Recently, I commend the governor for putting a lot more funding into adequacy funding for school districts, especially city school districts like Bethlehem that have a higher percentage of English as a second language students, a higher percentage of students with learning disabilities. And the expense of that to provide that education just keeps growing and growing. And for a long time, the state of Pennsylvania was really near the bottom of the 50 states as far as its effort in helping fund public schools. And so it's always, whether it's direct lobbying of your legislators or working in Bethlehem, we have a group called BASD Proud Parents, who are parents of kids, but they can advocate for statewide policies that perhaps a superintendent can't. And are connected to our local and state legislators, so you know the funding has been a challenge. The politics of that and the regularity of it. Recently, it's been better. It needs Pennsylvania is under constitutional order to increase its equity in its funding of school districts, and it's not quite there yet, but it's making progress. And then there's been a lot of, especially recently, a lot of issues related to DEI in public schools. And, you know, my thinking is that really isn't a political issue. You know, diversity. Okay, we are diverse. If you look in your eyes don't deceive you. You walk down the hallways of our schools. Students come from a lot of different places, speak to, some different languages, have backgrounds. Okay, we are diverse. That's rich. Equity, giving kids what they need. Well, that's education, providing kids the material needs and the opportunities to grow. And then inclusion. Well, we don't want to exclude anybody.
Right.
The public schools include.
So seems like common sense.
So when
it?
You hear all it, especially a few years ago when there was a lot of pressure on public institutions and you know what your you know, the criticisms about DEI, I was like, well, I don't see it. Like, I don't, and neither did our community. You know, our community has always been supportive of those principles, and I think that's part of the key to its success. And plus, I always thought, you know, if you start changing your tune on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and you start calling it other things, or you start moving away from it, it really questions your veracity. Of what your school district stands for. So I was always lucky that our board and our community and our faculty and staff see that political issue for not being a political issue. It's just good things that we do for our kids and families.
And you did talk about this, but you've spoken publicly about creating opportunities for all students, regardless of background or circumstance. Mm-hmm. Why has equity remained such an important focus for you?
Because the world around kids is more challenging, and the world around families is difficult. So, you know, poverty in younger families has increased over the last 5-10 years. Housing and the cost of it and the unavailability of it over time are challenges for it. So kids are coming, and the cost of childcare, the cost of just regular, just life is more difficult. So when, you know, when students are coming to school, those are some pretty heavy bags to carry that get in the way of learning. So we have to keep our minds on that. We have to at least we're primarily an academic institution. Don't get me wrong. We're there to teach kids what they need to know and do what they're able to do. But we have to be aware of all of those circumstances, those social circumstances that are either going to make it easier for them to learn or harder for them to learn. And those circumstances have more recently been more difficult for students and families. Mm.
You received, and I got to witness, the Bethlehem Legacy Award. Your emotion during that speech, by the way, moved me, and I'm sure the rest of the room that was there. What did that honor mean to you personally and professionally?
Well, for me, my career in Bethlehem has really been an opportunity to pay it forward, not just to the school system, but to the overall community that has served me and my family very well. Mm-hmm. So I remember telling that that audience that evening that I started life, the first 2 years of life, I spent in a second-story crowded two-room apartment with my brother, sister, and my parents on 4th Street in South Bethlehem. And I think of, you know, if a student today were in those same circumstances, what would the needs be? What would the challenges be? Mm-hmm. And that I've had a path over the last 62 years to be able to create that opportunities were created for me that I would be able to access. And they were all community-based opportunities. The teachers that I had in elementary school took a kid who was really, you know, a nothing special kid, and must have seen some ability in me to be able to support me. And I remember in late elementary school, for the first time, reaching out in the community. It was the same year we were celebrating the bicentennial, the 200th anniversary.
Yeah.
And I remember my teachers helping us celebrate that. And I remember being part of a student committee that went out and saw the Freedom Train and went out to the community events that were going on. And I was like, wow, I sort of like this business. I like getting out there. And then, you know, that further experiences, I mentioned in that speech, going to Brockle, then junior high school, changed my life because I was there with students who were and families much different than my own. And I saw, you know, what great richness there is in a community and what opportunity is for me and for everybody, and how I might have had a little bit more opportunity than some of the kids that I met and became friends with at Brockle. But it really sort of changed my life into thinking that, yes, you should be involved in the community, but not everybody has the same opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Then in Bethlehem, when I was a kid, going to Liberty High School was like huge. And having had the teachers there that I had and the coaches particularly that I had were really inspiring to me. So when I decided, and that led to my career in education, which led to me being here today. When I received that legacy award, the legacy really isn't an award for me. It's an award. The legacy is the community itself. And I was just simply recognizing that and being thankful for that. And my hope would be that every kid that grows up in the Bethlehem Area School District would have a legacy, that legacy of support behind him or her that I had. And then that's all I was trying to communicate.
Yeah, well, it came across beautifully. And, you know, so every long leadership journey comes with setbacks and difficult seasons. And we talked about the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, what has been one of the toughest challenges you've faced professionally? And how did you work through it? Anything that you can, you know, share from a leadership perspective and how you were able to overcome that hurdle?
Public education is not immune to the changes in the economy, the ups and downs, the booms and busts. And there have been times, you know, even before the pandemic, in 2012, public education took a major hit at the state level, and we were having a hard time balancing the budget or making the budget. And we had to then plan for, you know, staffing reductions, program reductions, finding greater efficiencies. And, you know, no matter how creative you are, when you're not replacing employees or moving employees, furloughing employees, everyone else has to work harder to achieve the same effect. And managing not only that transformation, but also managing the morale, making sure that standards don't slip for the students. Those, you know, the same challenges that hit companies and families in the economy hit schools. And that's happening a little bit now. The economy, as you can see, school districts around us, it's just not a Bethlehem thing, have had to really raise taxes more than they would prefer to be able to keep their commitments to their employees and to their students. And navigating that is stressful because it's easier to lead and govern when resources are plentiful and you don't have to make as many hard choices. But it becomes that much more difficult when you're trying to maintain or expand a large organization and you're going to have to do it with fewer resources. So I'd say that's the challenging piece.
Yeah.
You didn't have that as a teacher. That wasn't as big a deal because your focus was on those 25 kids in front of you and how much quality that lesson's going to be. But when you become a superintendent or a central office person, all that business and financial related stuff becomes more and more of a challenge.
Yeah. And as you prepare for retirement, which is coming up imminently, what emotions come with stepping away from a role that has been such a defining part of your life? And how would you define success at this point in your career?
I'm satisfied with my career.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, I think 40 years is a nice round number. And I think the Bethlehem Area School District is in a good position right now. I think I'm very, very proud of the leadership team that really is responsible for the success of the district, whether that be the executive cabinet members who I work with on a daily basis, who are basically at the education center, making sure all of our human resources, our facilities, our educational programs, our technology, we're a huge organization. So working with them is going to guarantee the future success of the district. So I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud of the teachers and of the principals. I've been around long enough. This is my 16th year in the Bethlehem Area School District. And for a lot of those years, I was responsible for interviewing and selection of teachers and principals, and I see them in their careers now being just exceptional at their jobs. So I'm proud of that. So I know the district is in good hands, and I know we have an excellent school board that really has the interests of our students and our community at heart, and makes the tough decisions and asks the difficult questions when they have to be. So having worked with them, that I'm satisfied with the governance of our school district. So it seemed like it was a good time to, at this point, to step aside. There are definitely future challenges. I mean, we're looking ahead of, we have some shrinking enrollment in our school district, and you know, we have some aging facilities. There's some choices we have to make.
Sure.
But giving a person the opportunity to tackle those from the beginning rather than coming in on the middle is something that I wanted the next superintendent to be able to do. So I'm satisfied with where I am, and I'll miss it. I've woke up every day at 5:30 in the morning for the last 40 years, and sometimes when it's snowing even earlier than that.
And I'm sure it'll be hard to turn off that alarm clock, right?
Yeah, that'll be a challenge, that getting into the routines. But I'm ready for that next chapter.
So as we, you know, we're almost at the end of the program here, but if you were to provide any parting words or advice for some of the, you know, future teachers coming in 30 seconds, what would that be?
Believe that your students can and should learn, and that given the right opportunities and the right methods and given the amount of support, that there is no child out there, no matter if they start at the top or they start at the bottom, that can't be successful, and they should be successful. And if they're not, that's on us. That means we have to do something a little bit differently or try a little harder or give a little bit more resources. But there should never be any quit around a student. And I'm proud to say that I work with teachers that don't have any quit in them and that they're in it for the benefit of the children. That's why they got into the profession. I interviewed a lot of teachers over my years, and I said, well, why do you want to be a teacher? And they would say, because I want to help somebody and touch the future. Well, okay. The only way you do that is you never quit on a kid. And so that would be my advice.
And you never have. For years, Dr. Jack Silva has led with the understanding that education is ultimately about people, about giving students opportunities, helping young people discover their potential, and preparing future generations, not just for careers, but for life itself. His leadership of the district came during a period of enormous change and challenge in public education, and yet throughout it all, he remained focused on students, equity, innovation, and community. And as he prepares for retirement, tonight's conversation serves as a reminder that the true impact of educational leadership is often impossible to fully measure, because its effect lives on through the lives of the students, families, educators, and communities touched along the way. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Trailblazers. I'm Melody Bradford, and we'll see you next time as we continue spotlighting the leaders, visionaries, and change makers shaping our communities and the future. Thanks so much, Dr. Silva.
You're welcome. Thank you.